Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of AV Insider. As always, I'm your host, John Emota. AV Insider is a show on the Rave Radio Network, which can be found at ravepubs.com. As always, I have a special guest, and with the timing of things as of late, you've most likely heard of them due to Star Wars and other good stuff. But before I have them speak, I'd like to thank the sponsor, because they always keep our Northern California cloud moving along. Ingram Micro, the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you head over to ingrammicro.com, you can check out all the product offerings they have to you as an integrator. And a good handful of my previous guests have been there, but as always in AV Insider fashion, I'm just going to force you to listen to my voice in past episodes, which you can find on raypubs.com. Until then, head over to ingrammicro.com and check out all the products they have for you. As I mentioned, I have kind of a cool guest. All my guests are cool, I should say. That's, I think, unfair to say. But I think with the timing of things, as of recently, you've all heard of Star Wars. And you've probably all heard of Dolby by now. And if you haven't, you've been living under some sort of asteroid in the galaxy somewhere, hiding from it. Today, I have Stuart Bowling, who is the... And I'm probably going to say this wrong, but you're the head of product, Stuart, I always forget it. You're going to have to tell me.
Yeah. No worries. I am the director of content and creative relations for Dolby.
I was way off. I was going to say something like head of Astromech building and lead Imagineer, but you know, something like that, right?
I could go with that. Totally go with that.
And if you guys don't have that position yet, I'd be willing to apply and maybe be like an apprentice or a Padawan under that aspect of things. Let's talk a little bit about your background before we get into Dolby in general. Where did you come from before starting with Dolby? How did you get into the audio and video or any of this industry that we're all in currently?
Okay, yeah, sure. I started, God, now I feel really old. I started back in 1989, and I was a projectionist, so that's kind of like how I got into this. And then I got a gig with Warner Brother International Theaters. So the studio couldn't build movie theaters here, but they could internationally. And so they went on a massive building program where they built these amazing state-of-the-art multiplex movie theaters starting in England. And then they expanded across Europe and Asia. And then they were all Looney Tune themed. So it was all like Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and all of that. So... I studied with them as a projectionist, worked my way up through the company to ultimately then getting involved with the construction aspect and then the installation, calibration, and integration of the, at that time, film and sound projection technologies. And then from there, we'd done like a few projects with Lucasfilm THX, and I just happened to meet a really cool guy on one of the projects, and they were looking for someone, so that shifted me from Europe to the U.S., and then I moved to the Bay Area in 1999, and then I was at Lucasfilm for like 5 years, focusing initially on exhibition with regards to the THX program, but then shifting more into the professional side of post-production. And then from there, that led to then moving to Dolby, where I focused initially on their digital cinema products because of the background that we did towards the end with George wanting to get into digital filmmaking, and digital projection was in its infancy. So was one of a few people that had a lot of knowledge about that. And then, yeah, kind of worked my way through in Dolby between our products, and then I moved more into technical marketing with regards to I helped initiate Dolby Surround 7.1 with Pixar and getting 7.1 into movie theaters, and then was involved with Dolby Atmos from the very beginning, and then because of all the work that I did on that, then that led to the role that I do now, which is basically I work with filmmakers, I work with creatives. I bring them in, talk about our audio and video technologies like Atmos and Vision, and then help them understand how this fits into their post-production workflow, and then helping to get them to utilize the technologies and then get their movies released in movie theaters with it.
You basically created everything that we know about projection and audio and video today is what I got out of all of that.
It's been a fun ride.
That's awesome, man. I mean, one could only aspire to have done so much in the amount of time you have. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, for Dolby, a lot of people always talk about triggering or being part of a monumental event. And certainly Atmos was an amazing thing to be part of and to help initiate. But then also with our imaging technology and Dolby Vision to also be part of that amazing technology as well. So to have two amazing products to be part of is just fantastic.
Now, I want to talk about Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision separately, but before we can get
Yes.
into that, let's talk. Give me a little quick overview of who is Dolby and what are they. We know Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision, right? But before all that, who is Dolby? What do they do? What do they offer?
Right. So Dolby is named after our founder, Ray Dolby. The company was formed actually 50 years ago this year. It was originally formed in London, which was where Ray originally was. He was a graduate from Cambridge. And Ray was the true epitome of an engineer that was driven by curiosity. And he was not happy with the way recordings were, or playback of recordings, because there was a lot of noise in them, especially for music. And so he invented noise reduction. Which, if you're of my age, you will probably, you'd be able to go back to the Walkman era and remember the noise reduction slider B and C. So that was technology that Ray created. But then that noise reduction then moved into film production, and that led to the development of Dolby Surround, probably better known to AV enthusiasts as Dolby Pro Logic. And then from there, it just carried on going. So from surround sound, it then went into the digital area as we transitioned from analog to digital, with Dolby Digital with 5.1. And then from there, we went to 7.1. Then we went to Atmos for audio. But we're across every form of the entertainment chain, which is really unique for a company that we cover exhibition and motion pictures and creating technologies for them, but then we're also able to take that technology and then transition and improve the experience no matter where you are or on the go. So it could be in your home theater, it could be a full surround sound, it could be a sound bar, it could be headphone, tablet, mobile. We also improve corporate voice communications as well on conference calls. So, we have Dolby Meet Me with British Telecom right now. So yeah, we're across everything, including gaming. So it's amazing.
That is amazing. That's a wondrous journey. And so I think right now with where we are in technology with let's start with Dolby Atmos, right? We talked about surround sound, right? So whether that's 5.1, 7.1, 7.2, 9 channel even in some cases where some people have probably never even heard of that. We're well beyond that with Atmos capabilities, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Now, explain to me if you could and or the listeners. What does that mean for surround? Because your typical surround is, like I mentioned, left, center, right, sides, rears, rear surrounds, things like that. Typically at the ear level, if it's a home theater or home surround, they're generally on one plane, if you will. But with Atmos, it adds an extra layer, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So one of the things that we were missing, because everything was always in the horizontal plane, and we were always trying to give the illusion of something coming from overhead. Yet there really wasn't anything directly overhead to give you or reinforce that kind of experience. And so with Dolby Atmos, in movie theaters, we added 2 rows of overhead surround speakers. But the other big thing that we delivered with Atmos was that, especially in movie theaters, because you have a significant amount of surround speakers, you can have anywhere from 30, 40 in a typical movie theater in a ring around you, and those were typically driven either as splitting the room in half, so you had like a left surround and a right surround, so the array was all acting together. But with Atmos, we were able to now drive every individual speaker, so that way a filmmaker can localize or isolate a sound or group of sounds down to a specific location. And so that makes the movie going experience more lifelike, more realistic, very enveloping, more immersive. So, you could imagine like a horror drama where someone's trapped in a basement, and the initial camera view is of the victim trapped in the basement, and now they're looking at the ceiling because they're hearing the assailant coming back for them. And now what we can do is to help reinforce that kind of effect is that we can have those footsteps as that person's walking over the ceiling. We can have those footsteps go across the ceiling. And so that adds a lot more tension, a lot more drama, and something that we couldn't do before because, you wouldn't want footsteps to the side of you because that would just snap you out of the movie. But now you can really
And
reinforce
all
that.
of this is in efforts to provide a better movie-going experience, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the other thing is, as well, is that we control the intent, so that way, whatever the filmmaker did in the movie theater, we assure them that we can accurately translate that into experiences away from the movie
And
theater.
this is all done, like you said, they're able to place a sound via a space or an object in the theater, and that's what I'm hearing or seeing as object-based surround, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So that's brand new. Well, 3 years
New
old,
enough,
but
right?
near enough. Yeah, exactly. So, and the difference is that, I mean, traditionally movies are all made up of objects, as it were, but then they're all combined and they're all output into channels, and then everything becomes fixed with Atmos and having individual sounds being driven as objects. Then we're actually using positional metadata. So as the mixer is creating the soundtrack and moving sounds around, we're recording positional information as to where that sound exists in space. So there's an X, a Y, and a Z coordinate attached to it, almost like a GPS signal. Then when that goes out into a movie theater or even in the home, in the movie theater, they're all different sizes, all different shapes, different quantity of speakers. But the cinema decoder is able for the first time to understand the environment that it's in that it has almost a 3D visual in its mind. So we tell it the length of the room, the width of the room, the height of the front, height of the back, and then we tell it where every individual loudspeaker is located. So that way it accurately plays back and positions sound exactly where it needs to be in any environment. And in the home, we do the same thing with the AVR. That you're putting in more information now to the AVR. And so that way it's able to understand how to take this kind of master mix and then play it back, almost as if the mixer was in the room and mixed it, uniquely for your
Now,
room.
with Dolby Atmos, Dolby itself does not build the hardware, correct? It's more of software and it's licensed to manufacturers who make the AVR to use this technology, correct?
In the home, correct. In the professional world, we actually build reference. We build a reference
I
encoder and a
see.
reference decoder. So we actually sell
Okay.
products to movie
And
theaters.
that's so if I were to go to a
Yeah.
theater, that's exactly, well, even like the Dolby Theater, correct? That's exactly the experience I would get
Correct.
direct from Dolby. Okay, now
Exactly.
with object-based technology, we talked about being able to move sounds or certain things specifically between like it, s somewhere in the room, heights between two people, things like that. It as the old way, like just to give an example, as when we're a plane or something were to fly overhead, it doesn't with sound, like I said, they was driven through channels and that was just a single plane and it moved down the side of the room versus now with Dolby, it can physically go overhead and things like that.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So now you can, especially in the home AV market, now you can put in more speakers and have greater resolution. And pretty much the same for the movie theaters now that they can have that higher resolution because we have full range surrounds for them, and that way, we have complete timbre match with a screen system in movie theaters, which was always a challenge before because surrounds used to be band limited originally in movie theaters. So now all that's gone away, so now you can have a sound transition anywhere from the screen, either going around or over, and have that match as close as possible to the experience from the screen. And so then that way, you as a moviegoer don't get snapped out about the story because everything sounds correct, everything sounds balanced, You just feel like you're there by the environments that the
When
filmmaker's
you
putting you
were
in.
initially working on Dolby Atmos, what, I guess, other than, trying to make things sound realistic, right, in the way we live in the world of a 3D space versus on a one linear plane where there's echoes and reflections and things like that, what, when this was being developed, what were you guys kind of thinking about the reason for Dolby Atmos to be in existence?
So that's a great question, actually. So over the years, we have a great relationship with creatives, and then also with the re-recording industry, as in the people that create and mix and put together the soundtracks to movies. And this goes back as far as even like Episode One, when Gary Rydstrom wanted to have a rear surround channel in movie theaters. At that time, we were delivering everything on 35 millimeter. We were squeezing 5.1, channels of audio between the sprockets on 35 millimeter. And he wanted a rear surround channel. And the only way we could do that was to kind of do like a Prologic encode into the left and right surround to then derive a rear surround channel. And so because it was Prologic, there was limitations to what you could do creatively. And with the advent of digital cinema and breaking away from all of that, and we had a lot more bandwidth available, we could start to drive things discreetly and without any form of compression. And so while we were able to deliver 7.1, which was a great benefit, from Toy Story 3 onward in theaters, the creatives were still saying, we still kind of feel that we're missing something. We feel we don't have full range surround, so we feel that we're limited in what we can do. And we also feel that we really don't have anything coming from overhead. And so we went through a kind of natural progression, which was, we'd already delivered 7.1. So we started working on what would be the next iteration. So we tried 11.1. And 11.1 was basically your 7.1 configuration. We actually had two height channels behind the screen, almost like a PL2X. And then we also added overhead. And so we did a test mix at Skywalker. Pixar was really gracious to let us have access to a piece of content from The Incredibles. And we remixed it as a test. And it was really interesting because, A, the mixer was really struggling. Every time they were going to go between any of these new zones, we were having to stop, we were having to repatch, we were having to rebus. The panner, there was no panning law for what we were doing. Panning law meaning it's telling the joystick and the software is telling the sound where it needs to be and how it transitions between zones. And so panning was typically capped at 7.1. And then when we were able to play it back, we were like, okay, there's some interesting things here, but it wasn't, excuse me, it was only incremental add-on. And so we were like, all right, well, what are we fixing here? Are we just creating another problem? Because now, at this time, 7.1 was making its way into movie theaters, and we were still delivering a 7.1 track and a 5.1 track. So we'd added a second deliverable. So we said, okay, we need to create something that has to be intelligent, has to identify itself. We have to remove steps, we have to create tools. And when we sat down and analyzed what all the problems were and what the goal was that we wanted, then that's when we came up with Atmos and an object-based system and bringing intelligence back to audio so that the system identifies itself and knows what
Now,
to do.
that was in the early phases. Now, once Dolby Atmos was released and successful for the very first time, what was that like for you to accomplish something like that? Or when you first experienced it, let's say before, let's say right before you released it to the public, once you guys got it right, what did that sound like or feel like for you? Like, did you just know, like, this is it? This is what we've been working for?
Yeah, I mean it was an incredibly amazing and rewarding experience. And we knew we were at the right point. Even though we were early and the tools weren't done, we actually brought in Will Files, who's actually a really good friend and a re-recording mixer. He's actually working on the Deadpool right now. But Will came in, used to work at Skywalker, incredibly articulate, young up-and-coming mixer at the time, and he was very experimental. And so we showed him Atmos in the very beginning, and we didn't have the tool in place. And so he came in and he's like, "All right, well, where's the panner?" And we're like, "Well, right now all we have is a mouse." And he's like, "Oh, you guys are crazy." He goes, "Let's go out and buy a Wacom tablet." So we went out and bought a Wacom tablet. And then at that time, we could only do 16 objects because this was in the beginning of the, developing all the tools. And so we went back to the same piece of content that we did, The Incredibles, and we remixed that sequence in Atmos. And it was the 100-mile dash, which is the sequence where they're in the jungle and the family's like running through the jungle and you've got all the velocipods and everything happening. And he did an amazing jaw-dropping mix of that sequence. And when we played that back, we were all just floored. It was just so demonstrably different than anything you've ever heard before. Being able to track where these sounds were like coming. I mean, if you closed your eyes, you knew where that sound was as it zipped by you, the resolution of it going behind, around, and over. It was amazing. And we actually showed that same sequence to Brad Bird, and he was like, "Oh, can I tweet about this?" And we're like, "Okay." And so he came out and just said, "I just saw a killer demo of Dolby's new super duper top secret sound
That
system."
sounds like something like if you let me in the into the Dolby offices, I'd be like, I don't know if I'm going to ask him to start tweeting it and I'll get in trouble. Project X,
Right,
I'm about to get
exactly,
booted from the building, basically. Like, you're never allowed back here. Before we move any further, as always, I'd like to thank the sponsor again that I previously mentioned is Ingram Micro. Head over to ingrammicro.com. Check out some other product offerings for you as a distribution company. You're an integrator. Some of my previous guests have been on there. Gonna force you to listen to my voice in previous episodes of AV Insider to find out who they are, or you can just skip all that and head over to ingrammicro.com. Check out that stuff that they have for you. Stuart, that's a good overview of Dolby Atmos. I want to circle back to that in a minute, but first, can we talk a little bit about Dolby Vision? What does that even mean?
Right. So that was the second amazing technology to be part of. So at Dolby, we've actually been working on imaging technology for over a decade. We started with movie theaters because everything plays back off a specialized server, because obviously film has gone away. And we started with that. And as we were looking at imaging technology, we were seeing what we'd seen in audio, which again was this arms race, which was like, okay, now we're gonna have 5.1, 7.1, 9.1, and we didn't want to get into that arms race either. And so, because we were having 2K, we have 4K, there's higher frame rates coming out. And in our research, one of the things that we realized that was missing from image was high dynamic range and contrast. So, to put that into perspective, the best 35 millimeter film stock, Vision Premiere, which used to be in movie theaters, had a contrast ratio of 8,000 to 1. Today, everything is pretty much digital, apart from these smattering of 70 millimeter screens for Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight. But all those digital screens, regardless of whether they're 2K or 4K presentations, their contrast ratio is on average about 2,100 to 1 inside a movie theater. And so when we were developing Dolby Vision, and we found that contrast was key, we said, okay, we have to make this like what we did for Atmos, which it has to be demonstrably different. And so we co-developed with a digital cinema manufacturer, Christie Digital. We developed a new digital cinema projection system exclusively for Dolby. And that Dolby Vision technology is laser driven. Love to say
Laser.
laser. Laser. And we can deliver a phenomenal contrast ratio in excess of a million to one.
Good God.
So when we project black, it's like all the light gets sucked out of the room. Whereas like in a regular cinema, when we project black, it's
Okay.
kind of milky gray. And then the other thing that we did was we actually doubled the light output. So typically in a movie theater, we have this number, it's called 14 foot Lamberts. That's the calibration of light level inside a projection system onto the movie screen for the theater that you're in. we now double over more than double that. We are at 31 foot Lambas on Dolby Vision movies. And the reason for doing that is it allows the ability for the filmmaker to use things like specular highlights. So in the real world today, our eye is capable of dealing with over 24 stops of range. And the Dolby Vision projection technology is capable of 15 stops versus the 10 stops that a standard cinema projector can do. And so now what that means is that for a filmmaker, you can have all of these effects that they lose because the display technologies couldn't handle it. So you can be outside, the sun is beating down, it's glinting off a car, that little glint, we can maintain that. One of the things next time you go to see a movie, look at the sky. How much detail do you ever see in a sky? And the answer is not a lot, because predominantly skies get washed out because they're so bright that in order to maintain the overall image, the filmmaker has to pull that back. And so skies are not as bright and you don't see the detail in clouds, etc. So we now can do that. You can now have a shot where the sun is beating down behind an actor. And actually still see the sun, whereas today, if we did that shot, that sunlight would clip and they would li literally have to pull that back down so it doesn't look as natural and bright as it is in the real world. But then also being able to have halation of light, especially like if you're in a forest sequence, the way the light streams through, a lot of difference between lights and darks and shadowing and detail. So when you look at something in high dynamic range and something like Dolby Vision, then everything becomes so beautiful, so detailed. The edges look sharper. It almost looks 3D. You see so much detail in the costumes and the sets, and it's like looking through a window but removing the glass.
So adding high dynamic range, and what was the other portion to that?
So it was adding
In
high dynamic
contrast.
range and contrast, which were the two key things to pushing the future of image. And then our projection system is agnostic, so that we support 2K, 4K, and higher frame rates. So that way, we leave the creative tool to the filmmaker, but provide them full power over what they want to do. And so, like The Force Awakens is available right now. In about, what is it, 10, 11 theaters right now playing across North America. And it looks phenomenal, especially the sequences where you're in space, you're seeing all the stars, everything looks jet black and so contrasty. It's just
In Dolby
amazing.
Vision and Dolby Atmos?
In Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. So what we did with Dolby Vision was we not only created this incredible technology, but we said if we let this loose in the world, we're going to run into a problem, which is that the standard auditorium inside a movie theater is bright. They use a lot of bright colors, a lot of ambient light, and we said no, we want to improve the movie-going experience. So we launched our own program called Dolby Cinema, and Dolby Cinema is where we have a unique design, so that way if you go to any of these Dolby cinemas, they all look familiar. And we basically redesigned the interior of a theater so that we could have better seating exposure, better sight lines. The interior of our theaters is matte black, so that way it really controls ambient light. We use state-of-the-art LED lighting for emergency lighting, so that way we can minimize reflective light back onto the screen. We use the largest screens possible for the room, so they're wall-to-wall, floor-to-ceiling. The screens are actually floating in that they're projected forward off the rear wall. And then we also design the acoustics of the auditorium. We specify the speakers that go in there. It's a whole program design process. Hand-holding Dolby engineers going out, calibrating both the projectors and the Atmos system. The Atmos system that goes in these rooms is actually our studio reference, so it has the maximum density of speaker locations of any theater.
Dolby Atmos, Dolby Vision, Dolby Cinema, which were you a part of that program as well, the Dolby Cinema? So three
Yes.
amazing
So,
technologies.
two amazing technologies and one
Experience.
amazing
There we
movie
go.
theater experience. So it was all about the experiential factor of going to see a movie. And the, you know, movies are supposed to be magic. You're supposed to be lost in the moment, immersed, enveloped. And by adding Atmos, by adding vision, by carefully controlling the environmental experience, then you get the best movie-going experience possible. And then, as if we couldn't top that, we came up with a signature entrance, which we try and get in as many locations as possible, but sometimes we can't. But basically, as you enter traditionally into a movie theater, you typically have two doors that you walk into. You kind of go down a, you know, a mid-lit corridor, and then you're inside the theater. So we said, what a wasted opportunity. What could we do? So we created a very matte black entranceway. We removed doors, made it open. But then the rear wall, as you're kind of walking into the corridor, we said, what if we turn that into an audiovisual experience? And so we have a giant wraparound, almost like a giant video wall, where we're using short throw projectors inside the ceiling that map and create a massive continuous image. And then we also have an audio system inside the ceiling. And so we didn't want to run traditional ads, things like Coke, Pepsi, you know, or trailers, you know, that you're accustomed to. We said, what if we did something different? What if we used elements from the movie, where it was like images and the logo of the movie and sounds from the movie? That way it acts as an attractor from the lobby, that you see something different, like, wow, yeah, that's cool. What is that? But then when you walk in, you're seeing, you know, these amazing images like from Star Wars. You're hearing the music from Star Wars. And psychologically, it really puts you in the mind frame for seeing that movie.
And this is in how many theaters across the world currently?
Across the world, there's like 14. So currently in the U.S., we have Dolby Cinema at AMC Prime. Which is in, that's in about 8-9 locations right now. There'll be 50 of them in the U.S. by the end of 2016, including San Francisco. And then right now they're in major metropolitan cities. So there's like a couple in L.A. We're in Kansas City, which is AMC's corporate headquarters. We're in Chicago. We're in Atlanta. We're in New York. And then we'll, you know, we'll continue to push out. But if you're in LA, you're lucky because there's not only two Dolby Cinemas there, but the El Capitan, which is Disney's theater, there is a Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos system in that theater. And so you can experience The Force Awakens there in all its glory
Well, I'm assuming the one in San Francisco you're talking about is Dolby's personal theater, the new one that's being built, correct?
Actually not, no. So the one that we're building will have all of our design elements in there. And then the Dolby Cinema at AMC Prime will appear at the Metreon. It's currently tracking for like mid next year.
Noted. Putting that in my little book of things to follow up on later.
Absolutely. And then we created this incredible technology. We've had over 10 movies created since we launched it with Brad Bird and Tomorrowland. But we've also done the same in the consumer space, that now you can get Dolby Vision on a flat panel. So we've increased the dynamic range of television significantly. And Vizio was the first company to launch. And so the Vizio reference series, there's a 65-inch and a 120-inch available. And then Vudu is actually streaming 4K UHD Dolby Vision Dolby Atmos enabled content into your home.
Holy crap. Hold on 1 second. More notes. Vudu. Okay. That's great. And now are you trying to partner? I mean, and maybe you can't say yes, but are you trying to partner more basically so the general consumers can experience this more if, you know, they don't have one of these experience centers, if you will, because that's basically what it is, an experience center. For the home, right? I mean, Vudu is providing that content via Dolby, but is that something that would be licensed more, you know, to produce this content for people to get at home?
Absolutely. So what you'll see is, you know, as time goes on, there'll be, you know, there's already a slew of titles from the studios available, both new and catalog, that they've gone back to. And then as we, you know, continue to roll out, certainly by CES, you know, you'll see, you know, announcements will have come out at CES of additional licensees, and there'll be more availability of these television sets coming to
That's so
market.
cool. Yeah, I'm gonna have to come bother you guys in the city sometime.
You should come by. We'd love to entertain you.
Speaking
That'd
of
be awesome.
entertainment, now this is a little off track from Dolby in general, but it's more on the Star Wars side and more about Stuart. And Stuart, I follow you on the internet, not in a weird, creepy way, but in a more of I'm entertained by these very, very cool astromech droids, if you will. Astromechs is what they are. You are a droid
Correct.
builder, correct?
I am, yeah. I have reached the pinnacle of
Now,
nerddom.
I myself ran into the very same group that we will talk about in here one second, and it was on Star Wars Day about 2 years ago. I was on the ferry ride over to San Francisco to watch the Giants play on Star Wars Day, and I was hanging out with some friends from the George Lucas Educational Foundation. And we're hanging out with this very, very large Wookiee friend, and we started chatting and stuff. And he mentioned a website called, I think it was R2 Builders, but also I think it would redirect to astromech.net or something like that. I can't remember. And so maybe, and may
Correct.
okay,
Yeah,
perfect.
that's
And
the
it's a
website.
collective of people who build astromechs, correct?
Correct. Yeah, you can build anything from a regular R2D2 to maybe a color variation of R2D2, or maybe you want to go way off base and just build your own custom version of an R2 unit, as well as there's gosh, what is R0s, R1s, R3s, R5s, R, you know, the list goes on.
Now, and
It's
so tell
amazing.
me a little bit, how did you get into something like that?
So I travel around the world a lot and domestically. I happen to be on a flight where, you know, as usual, you sat next to someone, you strike up a conversation, talk about what you do, and talking about what I do, I happen to mention that I'd worked for Lucasfilm at one point, and then this guy was like, oh my God, he's like, oh, I totally love the Star Wars movies, and I actually have my own R2D2. Excuse me. And I'm like, what? No way. Out comes a laptop, and then, you know, most people have pictures of their family, their pets, etc. No, this was like thousands of pictures of building an R2D2. And I was totally blown away, and he'd explained to me how it works and the club and everything. And so, like, I got home, like, all ultra buzzed. Fired up my computer and then found this website, set up an account to look get in, and then was just like a kid in a candy store and was just like, oh my God, this is awesome. And so my journey, like, I'm just over 2 years of building mine, because it takes time, because it's like you're trying to build the thing, and then you're trying to do your regular life, your jobs tend to take away from building your R2 unit. What's that about? And so I finished about 2 months ago R5D4. You may recall was the the little droid that could. He was a little red guy that has the bad motivator when we first meet Luke in episode 4, and then doesn't make it, and then they decide to take R2D2 instead. So I fell in love with that guy, and I have a life-size replica of him. He's all made out of aluminum. He's fully RC. Has sounds, lights, movement, and you can create. You're like puppeteering. You have like a little character
Yeah, he
there.
came out
It's
really, really
amazing.
nice, and I like the addition you gave him, kind of like kind of dirtied him up a little bit, like he'd been living in the desert for a while.
Yeah, that was actually that was my first real heart attack in life. So I finished him, and he looked like he just came off the factory floor. Like I can't tell you how many times I repainted something to make it meticulous. And then I looked at him, and I'm like, he looks fake. He doesn't look lived in. And so I went about the weathering process of dirtying him up and applying paint effects. And as I was going through it, I was like, oh my God, I've just destroyed all the work that I've just done on it. But in the end, I was like, oh
Yeah,
wow,
he
he
looks
looks
like
way
he kind
better.
of traveled around for many years. I like that. It came out really, really nice.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the only one you've built. You've built two, is that correct?
That is correct. I actually have an R2D2. He's almost done. and I'm continually adding pieces to him right now because his head is so complex. Like he has, like R5 basically just has LEDs in his head to light up, and that's it. I'm also going to add a pop-up bed motivator, and I have a little smoke thing for him as well. But in R2, all of his panels on his head open, so you're dealing with, servos and control of that. Then you have all of his lights, his little status indicator lights at the front, at the back, and then he's got like these little wiping lights. And then he's got his holo projectors. The holo projectors move. I have a periscope that pops out of his head. I have a little life form scanner that pops out of his head. So yeah, the head alone is
I
just—he's just crazy.
imagine, like you said, your job probably takes away from more of your time to build this.
Yeah, exactly.
Living here in the Bay Area, I often run into an R2 or a handful of them at events. One of your fellow coworkers you may or may not see every once in a while, Ryan Hennigan, had invited me to the Marin County Film Festival earlier this year with his former employers over at THX. And we went to go watch Star Wars. And it was fun, you got to see some stuff. And of course, everyone's all dressed up as the Legion. You have Darth Vader. There's an R2 out front hanging out, making noises. And I just feel like every time I go somewhere, there's always Star Wars something, no matter where I go. I'm like, well, this is fun. I went into a Maker Faire one time and ran into the Astromech website team. They were there. They had a whole bunch of R2s and R5s and just a bunch of droids, a whole display, kind of around when you walk into Maker Faire, and I was like, I want to be a part of this. But now hearing the time and effort you put in, I'm like, it sounds like I'm going to have to dedicate more time away from everything to build at least one, and I want to. So if you could tell me and listeners, what should they be interested like I am? Where could they go to learn more about building their own droid?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to astromech.net, then you can set up an account. It's free. And then basically that will open your eyes and world to the wonders of building droids. And the great thing about building a droid is a couple of things. One is that, if you want to build an all metal droid, then that pushes you into the more expensive side of building a droid. But you can build using different materials. So you can actually build him out of styrene, which is the lowest cost. And then you can also build him out of wood. And all the plans are on Astromech, and there's people on there that can help you with everything. You don't have to know about electronics. You don't have to know. You don't really have to know about buildings. There's so many people on there that will help you out. And then there are, here in the Bay Area, there's a whole bunch of us. So there's actually a Bay Area faction of what we do. And so we're all here to help each other and, and have that dream. And, maybe it's a family thing where it's like, father and his son, or even father and his daughter that wants to build a droid, because there is a female droid who actually makes an appearance in The Force Awakens, which is R2 KT. And she's a pink astromech.
You just spoiled the whole movie for me. I'm just kidding.
She's only in it fleetingly, so but
That's
she
pretty
got a
cool.
quick cameo because she came from the leader of the guy that created the 501st. His daughter was named Katie, and unfortunately, she passed away from cancer. But her wish was that she could have her own droid to watch over her. And so several members of the club scrambled together to build her this custom droid, which was R2KT. And then George heard about it at the time, and so the droid actually got incorporated into the animated stories. And then JJ and Kathleen Kennedy had also heard about it as well, and so they asked them to bring R2KT out and then give her a
That's so
cameo
cool.
in the movie. That is, that's what I love
Yeah,
about Star Wars.
that is so great. Okay. That is, man, again, you've done so much in your career. And just alone at Dolby, I mean, you've helped create Dolby Atmos, Dolby Vision, worked with Dolby Cinema, and helped produce all this content in the greater experience for movies. I feel like a lot of the stuff, not that I don't enjoy movies, because I do, But a lot of the stuff I feel has been lost in the past. When you go to a movie, it's people forget that you're there to enjoy or experience something. It often feels like, okay, I'm just kind of, sitting in a large theater with a bunch of other people, and it's not the experience that I've often remembered as a child or something like that, where a friend of mine who builds theaters or is a designer from Hawaii. He told me that the way he explained it was the willing suspension of disbelief, in that, you're there to experience it. Forget that you're, at home or you're in a theater or something like that. You're there to experience a movie, the audio, the whole experience, and take yourself out of reality. And with
Absolutely.
things like Dolby Atmos, Dolby Vision, and the Dolby Cinema, that, like I mentioned earlier, is the experience center that I. It is so awesome to see technology advance to provide that experience.
It's really amazing. And in the Dolby Cinemas, we pretty much hide all the technology. So the Atmos sound system is actually in the full design of Dolby Cinema. It's concealed. In the iteration that AMC Prime has, they put LEDs so you can see where the speakers are. But in the full version, we wanted to conceal them because we didn't want you to anticipate or know where a sound could come from, and basically just, reinforce and add to that
That's pretty
suspension of
cool.
disbelief.
Now, if people would like to learn more, head over to Dolby.com. That'll take you to their website where you can learn about many of these technologies we've mentioned for gaming, mobile, professional, home, a little bit of everything there. And if you are a social person like myself, you can check them out on Facebook at facebook.com/Dolby. If you prefer your media in 140 characters or less, it's at Dolby on Twitter. They're also on LinkedIn. There's some great content on YouTube. If you just go to youtube.com/user/Dolby Insider. If you like imagery, it's at Dolby Labs on Instagram. There's also some good stuff on Vimeo as well, vimeo.com/Dolby. If you want to tweet at me, should Twitter still exist tomorrow, I'm at jmota3, JMOTA, the number 3. If you want to email me and tell me that you loved my show or that you hated my show, I'll give you the choice of both. It's Johnny, JOHNNYMOTA, the number 3, at gmail.com. You can tell me whatever you like. You want to be on the show? Let's talk about technology. Although I kind of feel like Stewart's probably done the most notable technology in the last few years, it's going to be hard to top, but I'm willing to talk about it. So email me there. It's johnnymoto3@gmail.com. Stewart, thank you so much for your time. I
My
greatly
pleasure.
appreciated all this knowledge you've imparted us with. And yeah, next time I'd like to have you back. Bring your droids. I want to have them on the show. And I have
Yeah,
a bunch of
absolutely.
other really cool friends in the industry who love Star Wars too, so maybe we can talk more about Star Wars in the future. So yeah, in the future I'd love to have you back on the show should you create another really amazing technology, because you have so many in your on your list of things you've done so far. I kind of feel like you're probably already working on another already. So until then, everyone, this has been AV Insider. Thanks for listening. Catch us on the next episode.